Okay, it looks like the transcription recording has started, so I will call the meeting to order. Josh Mozell is here, who's a co-chair as well. We have just as a at the outset, we've had our introductions as to who's on the line. I believe Frederica and Larry, of course, are both on. Moving down, does any member have a disclosure of interest as of conflict of interest as to any issue on the agenda?
I didn't know.
Don't see anybody indicating they do, so we will proceed. Geraldine Rill, hi, Jerry. Jerry's on now, and Summer's on now. So we have, with the exception of Joy, a complete committee here tonight, and Joy had a emailed me just not long ago and is unable to join us, but and sends her regrets. In terms of updates,
If I may, but would it not be appropriate to have the members identify themselves and say present? Because I'm just wondering.
Sure. I thought we did that earlier, but
We didn't.
we'll just go. I thought we called out everybody off everybody's name, but we'll make it, we'll do it official. So I will call off names. Rachel Strife.
Present.
Josh Mozell.
Here.
Matthew Moody.
Here.
Holly Giesel is present. Let's see, Summer Walter.
Present.
And who am I forgetting? Dr. Potts.
I am also here. Thank you.
And let's see who else. Anybody else that I missed?
Jerry Roll.
Jerry Roll is present. Yes. Thank you. So now we've all been introduced and counted present. In terms of an update, the only update that we have, and I'm very happy to be able to give this update, we have an exciting potential new member who's on the call. And I believe you saw she was sitting in her car, and she is a, we're really just very happy to have Ms. Williams interested in being with us. You should have gotten a copy of her resume earlier today. It's incredibly impressive. Her background in social work is so deep, and she's currently the social worker for the Public Defender's Office at the City of Phoenix Municipal Courts, and has deep knowledge in the system. She was at ASH just today on the civil side, where a staff member there under our new law has filed charges or sought charges against a staff who assaulted her. And of course, under the new law, we're seeing an explosion in that particular kind of charging. But I'm just glad Ms. Williams is here. This will be her first meeting, and I think the fact that she was attending from her car, maybe in the ASH parking lot, shows that she's a social worker, and she shows up when she's supposed to, and it parking lot or elsewhere, and she is, I think, very dedicated. So I'm happy about that. Hopefully in the next couple meetings, we'll get her on board. Okay. Josh, any updates that you have?
No.
Okay. I hope many of you may have seen the KJZZ story that Josh was on with with the attorney Megan Kramer from the Arizona Center for Disability Law. They had a very interesting interview about involuntary commitment and why it may be necessary from time to time to confine individuals who are dangerous. If you haven't heard that, it was this past week, last week.
Last week,
yeah. And be sure and check that out. Listen to it. It was excellent. Okay, let's do our updates from community partners. Is anyone from Mercy Care present with an update? Don't think so. Arizona Complete.
Hey, this is Taryn Ulick. No updates from Arizona Complete Health. Thank you.
Thank you. Banner Health.
Hi, everyone. Joe Keltzman with Banner Health. We have no updates at this time.
Thank you. Melina. No, Melina, it seems like United Healthcare.
Hi, good evening, everyone. This is Dawn McReynolds. We do not have any updates for this meeting tonight. Thank you.
Thank you all, as always, for being here. Did I skip any of our health plan representatives?
Good evening. This is Bree Barrios from Blue Cross Blue Shield Health Choice, and I do have one new team member on as well tonight.
Oh, good. Please introduce your team member.
Yeah, I will pass it to Maria. Maria Reyes is our new member liaison coordinator. Maria, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, thank you. I'm sorry if you guys could hear a little bit of noise. My name is Maria Reyes, and I am the member liaison coordinator, and I will be the lead for the member advisory council, and I'm looking forward to working with everyone.
Thank you. Welcome, and we look forward to your participation. Okay, any other health plan representatives or community partners, as we call them?
This Mental Health America.
Mental, you're next.
Okay.
You're getting ahead. Stay in your lane, Mr. Moody.
I'll do my best.
We'll sick Dr. Potts on you. Any update from Larry Allen at ADOA?
Good evening. A couple things. Year-end report is due on November the 1st. If you need any help with that formatting, any kind of computer work, please let me know. I'll be happy to help you format it and get it to where it needs to be. I do have a cover letter for you and email addresses for you. I can send to you so you can put that together, or I can do it for you either way you wish, whichever is easier for you. I guess the other items I need from Summer and Rachel, if you could send me a picture of yourself behind a kind of a blank wall, much like a passport photo, then I can get you a badge issued for your IOC badge. So when you go to do your on-site visits, you need to produce that badge.
Mr. Allen. You said behind a blank wall. That probably won't be very helpful. You meant in front of a blank wall.
Oh, yeah.
Just messing with you.
Thank you for clarifying that, Dr. Potts. Yes, you want to be in front of the wall, not behind the wall. So you have a blank background is what I meant to say. But yes, if you can, Rachel and Summer, if you can send me that, that'd be great. And then I can get that issued for you. It usually takes around 2 weeks.
May I ask some questions?
Yes.
To get that. And Matt had a question?
Yeah.
I have a couple. One, I never got an IOC ID. Can I also email you a picture and have one issued?
Absolutely. Yes. And if your badge is expired, I know some of them have expired. If you haven't checked it in a while, please check it. It's got an expiration date on the bottom of it. And if so, please send me a pic and I can get that reissued for you. No problem.
Okay, great. And is it possible that I'm assuming that the old reports, the old yearly reports, are online somewhere? Is it somewhere I can find easily, or do you have one handy you can just send me so I can see the formatting and what's included and so forth?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I'll be happy to email you last year's report if that's okay for you. And I also post those on the website as well.
That's fine.
Yeah, but I'll be happy to email that to you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anything?
That's all I have.
Thank you. Frederica, anything from Access?
Good evening. The only thing that I have is if Summer and Rachel, if you guys can send me your preferred email address, I will need to send over to you both the confidentiality agreements for Access that we have so that if you guys ever want to get into the QM portal, we'll have that on file for you. That is all I have.
Thank you. And thank you for taking care of onboarding the new members. That is appreciated, Frederica. Okay, community organizations. Mr. Moody, go.
Hi, I represent Mental Health America of Arizona. So there's actually a conference coming up next Saturday. It's called Mental Health Matters. So the governor's office is going to be there, the mayor of Phoenix is going to be there, and the mayor of Scottsdale are all going to be there. And it's really a community started and focused event. So it's not like a clinician focused event or provider focused event. It's really for families to come out. It's a free setup. It's free to get in, is what I'm trying to say. Lunch is included. It's next Saturday for the first half of the day. It has hybrid versions, but I'll put the, so you can do online, you can do in person, but I'll put a link to the website here. But we're expecting about 500 people at Sky Song, well, online and in person, 500 people right now.
Wow.
So it's looking to be very cool. And the fact that the governor's office and the mayor are going to show up, mayors, is really cool.
Who's putting it on that?
It's a combo between Kid in the Corner and Mental Health America. There's a couple of smaller dishes, but they're nice. Cool.
That's in 500 people. Wow, on a Saturday.
Yeah, it's blowing my mind so far.
You know, NAMI, does anybody have a suggestion as to who at NAMI Josh and I should reach out to try and get some participation? We've always had them on the agenda, and I'm not sure that they know about this, and I'd love to have their input. They're really a focal point for families.
Yeah. Don McReynolds raised their hand.
Oh, Don, yes.
Hi, Holly. Vicki Johnston is the interim at NAMI right now for the state office. Would you like me to send Frederica her contact information to get that out to this IOC?
Yes, if you could. And I've talked to Vicki several times. I did not realize she was still there. She did a great job on the Behavioral Health Council. And we had her make a presentation to the IOC.
She took over for Jim.
She took over for Jim. Is she going to be permanent?
No.
No.
Not mine.
Okay. We will definitely call her. Contact. I think
the most responsive person in all of NAMI is Gloria Abril. And so I contact her too.
Okay. So we
can get you with her.
We've got two. Why don't you reach out to her and I'll reach out to Vicki. And so hopefully we'll get some get info and participation from NAMI. Okay, great. Our IOC community, Ash, is Lori Goldstein on the call?
Yes, I am, Holly.
Hi, you have any update or news or weather reports from La Jolla?
Yeah. The update from our Ash IOC is that, you know, we have had some IOC investigations into issues of allegations, and the new administration has been much more open and easy to work with based on other suggestions. They are making improvements, which is good to see. I mean, it's better than it was under the old administration. We have continued new investigations that we're going to be working on. And I do think that I can't wait until the new surveillance with audio and better video, because I mean, I just was at an architectural event and I was talking to someone who works on prisons and psych hospitals. And he said the number one thing to help is to make sure patients are safe from other patients, and patients are safe from staff, and staff are safe from other patients. And one of the key factors is design, number of staff, and also surveillance. It makes a difference knowing that you're being watched, sometimes monitored, people that may take advantage of being in positions of power over vulnerable populations. So I'm very excited for that, but I think we're still, what, Larry, a year off getting that installed, I believe.
Yes, I believe so.
Thank you, Lori. That's really, you're right. That's going to make such a difference. And I would encourage everybody, if you have go online and look at the report from Ash. It was in response to a statute that was passed requiring them to produce an annual report. Well, a report that includes a human resources plan and a clinical improvement plan, sort of a strategic plan. And they just produced it. They produced it timely. And it is an impressive report. You may not, we would all write a different, if we each wrote a report on ASH, it would be different. But this report is comprehensive. It outlines different scenarios. It's got tons of information. And it was remarkably, I thought, transparent in pointing out that some of ASH's problems arise from problems created by other state agencies. And it access notably. So I would encourage everybody in the field to look at that report. It's it was produced on September 1st or so, I believe. And
sorry. September 6th, Holly.
Okay.
September 6th.
Perfect. Thank you, Laurie. And it's worth a very careful read and having in your library as things go, as events unfold over the next few years. And I kudos to the administration for doing as good. It's an excellent report. I would think hundreds and hundreds of hours went into that document. Okay, Southern, is Ken Carroll's on? Or Northern, is Dorothy O'Brien on? Okay. Moving on, we'll go to the first item, unfinished business annual report. My proposal for the annual report, Josh and I haven't really discussed it in any depth, is that Josh and I produce a draft and have it out in advance of next month's meeting. And I think if it's succinct enough and simple enough that we should be able to have it reviewed, get feedback, and if we need to have a special meeting, we can do that with 24-hour notice to simply approve the annual report. And I would appreciate, members, if you could do this. If I could ask you to tell us two things, really, really frankly. What are you least satisfied with in terms of the IOC's operations? And what would you most like to see us focus on for next year? Josh and I will read those. Nothing is a secret because it's open meeting law, but we're not going to go and say, well, Matthew said that he hates coming to these meetings because they're boring and dull, or something. We're not going to rat you out, is what I'm trying to say. I'd really like to hear what is the least rewarding thing that went on this year? What was the least beneficial? And then what would you ideally like to see next year us focus on, what your interests are? And I think that will be a focus of our report, because we have had some building this year. We've got new members. We've got an opportunity almost with a clean slate, with just four of us, five being on for the past year, and Jack and Josh and I being on for years. But we've got an opportunity to really focus on what we'd like to create and create it. And I have no problem putting in an annual report things that we aspire to do and then we don't do because either we couldn't or we changed our mind. It's not like it's not an affidavit that you declare under penalty of perjury you're going to do these things. So I would love to have in it aspirations on how we think we could be more effective, what we are interested in. And one of the reasons for that is to draw on our strengths in our new members. We have Jerry, who's a prosecutor. Hopefully we'll have somebody from the public defender's office. We've got police now. We've got Matthew. We've got Summer, two new parents. We've got Rachel, who's really an expert in some drugs that are pertinent to our population. Rachel is a guardian for years for someone who has been in the system. I'm trying to think, make sure that I've covered everybody. So I think we've got breadth and depth in the whole community behavioral health field. It's fun. It's cool. And I just want to put it all out on the table and have members say, we don't like this that we've been doing, and we would like to do something. This is what we'd like to do. Our only constraint is the statute, and Josh is really good at writing around statutes. So we can fix that. Okay, and I skipped one of the things at the top, and that was pretty foolish of me. We are going to take this opportunity to hopefully vote on our prospective new member, Detective Sabrina Taylor, this is her third meeting. She shows up early, which is par for the course for a detective, because they want to really disarm you when you walk in. You wonder what's been going on before you got there. So I would entertain a motion regarding Detective Taylor's membership.
Jerry Roll, I would make a motion that we vote Taylor in as a member of the IOC.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Josh Mozell. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Okay.
Those opposed? Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so excited. You're official now. Yeah, it's going to be quite very cool. Very cool.
Badge.
Yeah, we need badges. Maybe yes, she has a nice badge. We need IOC badges. Could we get an IOC badge?
I just meant the one that we have.
She's got a real badge.
Yeah, I think she earned that.
She doesn't got a real badge. Yes, she probably needs another badge to keep up with, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. IADs and any seclusion and restraint reviews. Did anybody look at reports?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, great.
If I may, and I think that we have to be very careful. The statute mandates that each committee review incidents of possible abuse, neglect, or denial of a client's rights. That means one of our obligations, I believe, is to review the IADs. And I know this may be new business or not, but maybe you'll be on a new business, but that's something that all of us need to be doing as an obligation to be on this committee, because that's one of the statutory responsibilities, individual.
Yeah.
Right. IADs. Okay. No. Yeah. Good. Because we're not doing it, but I don't do it either, but we're not doing enough. And I think I'm trying to facilitate that by making recommendations. I reviewed about 50 IAD reports, and I have a question for Frederica. Are you able to quantify by the check marks how many IADs we reviewed in the last year?
I don't think I can do that on my end, but I'm pretty sure I can have a report requested from our ISD.
That might help with the annual. Yeah.
Really quickly, that it's only as good as the users. So if people go in and they review, but they don't select that they've reviewed, it may not give you an accurate number.
What I'm referring to for the members who aren't aware of this is that there's a checkbox after you review an IAD. And if we check that, it might help Holly and Josh in writing their annual report that we reviewed X amount of IADs. So that's something to think about, because it's a way of tallying it. Well, we don't have to manually go back and count them. I've requested information in inquiry form that is actually on the portal on 6 different IADs that I've reviewed, of the many I reviewed. I have the access has up until 24th of this month to give me a response. I gave them 30 days and I haven't received response to any of them. But so I have nothing to report definitively regarding the queries I had regarding the potential abuse of of the mentally ill, or some of just the problems with the reports. Often they are over redacted. But again, Joy reviewed a lot last month, I think. And right. I'm waiting for the response from Access on the ones I did review. And if I can help anyone with that, I'm glad to do so.
Dr. Potts?
Yeah.
So if I could interrupt, you know, as a new member, and we have other new members, and when I went out on some site visits with you, you showed me a portal. I have no idea how to get into the portal, and I don't know which IADs committee members should be reviewing. I think that we really need to know what our responsibilities are and have some sort of training in how we get through that portal and which IADs or in which sections that we should be looking at. That was all new to me.
Yeah. And I think you have that on the new item, new business. So I may be premature on that because it's not that hard, and some of the ones here for a long time have gone through that training multiple times. But so I did review many. I have queries on six, the queries incoming. And one more question for Frederica. Your supervisor, I forget, CJ, I forget, is it best to search by incident dates or report dates? I think it's best by report dates because that's more inclusive. Is that right, Frederica?
Yes, it will be by report dates. And I encourage you to check your email because I have responded to the ones that I've received back. So I can resend those to you because I have received responses on them.
I have checked my email. And I just checked it 5 minutes ago and I do not have any responses. So I appreciate if you do. I don't know why, because last time you said you did too, and I didn't get it. So I don't know what's happening with those. And maybe, but great. So anyway, so that's my report on IADs. I did review a whole lot of them, and I'm waiting for updates to see whether the committee, I recommend the committee make further action on them. Thank you, Holly.
Okay, let me, you indicated that you reviewed 50 and you had six questions which are pending at Access, and you're waiting, you gave them a 30-day response period. And you've not heard back.
I have yet to hear back. It may have, but they still have time to do it. And you can check 15 or 30 days. But again, these are reports. There's no urgency in most cases. And so I feel it's not fair to put pressure on the system when it is not needed.
Sure.
So I'll have a report on those if there's anything that red flags at me next time, and I'll do more reviews also. Thanks.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you. Site visit reports. Pinal County, Dr. Potts and Ms. Roll went on site visit.
Yeah, I'll start with just, I sent everyone an email with just a brief review of the one site, the Behavioral Health Residential Facility that we went to. And I sent a copy of a review we did 10 years ago. Just as a template, and I think maybe Matt would be interested, Secretary, as a template to see, you know, how we can do it. And I think it's good to get back into doing a formal review, I mean, writing what we saw. I think, you know, site visits, again, if I can let you know, under statute 413804, which we all should know and be familiar with, otherwise, you know, applying to the committee is like a pig in the poke, says that we may make site visits, which Department of Developmental Disabilities does not have the opportunity of doing. I mean, not DDD, but the IOC on DDD. But it says we shall make them for special assistance. So this is, again, is a mandatory response. And our bylaws mandate that everyone go on site visits. At least once a year, but this is the fun part of what we're doing. It's boots on the ground. This is the fun thing where you can see the living conditions, and this is what I think, this is the bottom line of what we do, in my opinion. It's not policy issues, it's protecting human rights and looking at the environments. So as an aside, you have what I saw and Jerry saw in our note. Does everyone, hopefully you all have a copy. It was all emailed a couple hours ago. Jerry, do you want to talk about, we went to the UPC also, which was kind of fun. She and I met down in Casa Grande, a schlep for both of us. But you want to talk about the UPC? Because you knew the people there. It's kind of interesting.
So it's CBI, and it's a very small unit. We are grateful in Pinal County that we have anything. If Mercy Care is on the line, I know that Pinal County is going to be better served as we go through time. I think it's a 16-bed unit. They turned an area that was supposed to be their courtroom because they wanted to do a Desert Vista sort of thing where they had court at CBI. There was too much to make that happen. They turned that into their crisis unit. So they have, I think, was it 5 chairs or 6 chairs, Dr. Potts?
Yes.
So that turns into their first 24-hour. It's a small room with 5 chairs, 6 chairs, the 24-hour crisis before they move them into their inpatient side. What can I say? I believe that they are sorely understaffed. They had one male. They have one male staff member. So CBI frequently gets overrun with violence and people that, you know, are more than their staff can handle.
Just if I may, they had rooms off of a central day room, mm-hmm. and they had men and women in them, and they tend to obviously try and keep the men and women apart from each other. They had fairly good observation in that respect, but as Ms. Roll said, they have one husky guy. It's kind of hard, and a lot of the guys were young, looked like they had been on meth, they were athletic, looked like they wanted a place to stay. It was interesting. For those, if you have questions, this is where the court ordered the when you get picked up by the police, this is where they go in Pinal County, one of the places. So it's the CBI equivalent to the RI, Recovery Innovations here, or the UPC here, yeah. Or Community Bridge. But, they were very open to us, were they not? I thought
they were. They really were. And I've been in UPC both downtown and at the new one that's the new one that they built. And of course Desert Vista. I do have to tell you, I didn't have the level of comfort that I got from some of the Phoenix facilities. I did feel
powder keg.
Yeah. We did go to a home in Casa Grande. I truly appreciate that we did a visit for a facility in Pinal County. It was clean. But it was simply a house, a housing. These are I think that Dr. Potts probably said it best. It's a clean jail. No services. No programming. There were 2 staff members on site. They had no one who could provide any sort of programming. There were no efforts made to make even community programs, off-site programs available to the residents. In fact, the residents, I don't think, could even leave the house, really.
Yeah. Did you all get the email I sent with the review of that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
One of the screen.
Yeah, no, okay, good. One of the biggest points, I think, that there was this is interesting because they had someone who's with the Southern Arizona IOC who's from Tucson, and their primary care services are through Tucson. She was there to get away from drugs, and she was a very nice mentally ill woman who had a serious substance abuse problem, had some good insight into that, who was not going to AA, and she was just warehoused there. And so I think I would suggest one of the focuses on the visits I'm going to be doing is looking at what programming really exists, because Mercy Care is paying for programming. And this, they had one group in 2 weeks. And that group was probably, you know, let's sit around and talk about what TV show you like the most. You know, and they weren't allowed to go out on walks unless it was unanimous. They all didn't want to go. The staff couldn't take them because one person said, I want to stay here. So they didn't even get out. And there's, as we looked earlier, there's some apparent rules that if they're out more than 4 hours a month, they don't get funding or something. You know, how do you teach people to ride the bus? How do you teach them self-sufficiency or independence, which is what they're supposed to be paid for? So that is, to me, and I think, Jerry, I think for both of us, it's a human rights violation to promise people care and advocacy and then put them in a place where they're not allowed to leave and they have no programming day in and day out.
Well, so, and I think that that's rather the problem is that in order to be licensed and in order to get that funding, those are the things that you are supposed to provide. And so what winds up happening, the house manager has 3 houses and has 5 staff to cover 3 houses. So there's not enough staff to do anything. And Dr. Potts, the staff that was there, lovely lady, but absolutely had no ability to provide any programming that they are being paid for. So it's an assisted living facility.
Yeah. So I guess the question I asked the committee is, I think we need to move this up the rung and say to Mercy Care that this place, who is funding this and who is reviewing the program activities here? I mean, maybe we ought to have a subcommittee, Ms. Giesel, or something to say, what do we do when we see these problems? Because we may not burden the whole committee with forwarding it, but maybe we can have a subcommittee make recommendations. We need to send a letter to these people. I don't know what to do next.
Well, and that's on the agenda a little later, but Josh has some questions and he's the BRF guru.
No, is it a BRF or was it a living? What was it licensed as, do you know?
Yeah, it's on the paper I sent you. It's a BRF.
It's a BRF.
I gave you the license number.
Jack, the reason I asked is Geraldine just said assisted living. So if you
no, she said it was like an assisted living is what I heard her say. More like for those who are just demented and they do nothing. So no, it is a BRF. I'm sorry. We both knew that. We had the license and we picked it out beforehand. Thanks, okay. Josh.
So they just sat there all day.
Is yes, right? Unequivocally.
So, when they're receiving reimbursement for services that they must provide, it's not only a members' rights issue, it's a fraud issue.
It's a fraud issue. What you just described is fraud. It's exactly what was happening at all the access facilities. They weren't providing services and they're being paid. Now, and the BRF gets money on a per diem, per person basis, and it covers room and board and programming. And if they're not doing the programming and they're being paid for it, then they need to, we will take the appropriate, I think we can vote on it. But I think that based on your report, this is a credible allegation of fraud.
Holly, if I may, you know, my role, I think, as a human rights is looking at the rights of the individual who are being abused right now.
Yes.
So their rights are being violated. I think my role or our role would be rather to forward it to Mercy Care, not say as a fraud issue, because that's a legal determination, a criminal investigation. My sense is, please tell us what is going on about this. Give us a plan of correction with this lack of services for these people. And then if they're smart enough, we can then maybe investigate further, follow up in 6 months, did they do anything with it? But, you know, I'm not in the job. My job on this committee isn't to investigate fraud. It's to take care of human rights violations. And that's I think if we approach it that way, then hopefully someone will be smart enough to read between the lines and say, this is fraud.
Well, And that's something we should, we'll have to deal with in our discussion. I think that we can report to Mercy, but we are an IOC organized with representatives from Access, Frederica, and the Department of Administration. So that's, I think our requirements are broader than Mercy.
Right, right. They'll go, that has to go to them too, I agree.
How many patients, how many members were there in the house? There were four. And
I actually rather agree with Dr. Potts. I, as a lawyer, I don't know that I want to go down the path of fraud. I want to go down the path of the people who are paying these people. And what is their, are we the oversight? And so then we tell the people who are paying these homes that you're paying for these services and these folks aren't getting it.
Okay, thank you. That's great. So what I'd like to know is exactly what human rights violations, you interviewed the individuals, right? Or you
talked? Yes, I did. No, he didn't. In fact, I think I have a release from one of them to actually specifically go into the records, but I think that's one that's in Tucson. My sense is what I would like to do is have the committee say, let us draft a letter of concern regarding the violations, and the violation of the rights isn't, doesn't have to be, you know, because there's no definition of what a human right is except from the United Nations Charter. You know, my sense is
what I would say,
if I may, is that no programming was occurring, and this lack of programming, lack of people being able to go offsite to AA meetings or have some other necessary rehabilitative functions is a right violation. Because they haven't, because, and this one was under COT, by the way, this one was under court order treatment, because that's a, it's not individualized treatment as defined by the Supreme Court. So I think there's a rights violation, no treatment.
Okay, I need to understand a little, I'm trying to understand the specifics. If she's not under, if one individual was under COT, right?
I don't know, there may have been more. We know that four people in that residence were not receiving services, period. And that would be what I would want investigated. I think it's very simple.
Okay. And I'm trying to get the time period. Because what I heard you say was that they'd had one group meeting at the house in 2 weeks.
That's what we heard, but the time period was when we went there. So the nice thing is we don't have to say it. If we start getting fudgy and saying, well, they didn't have it from this date to this date, I say, oh, well, you missed it by 3 dates. My sense is groups are not happening. We've heard it's been not happening for a protracted period of time. And we need it investigated by whomever, Access, who pays Mercy Care, who pays the birth. That's what I would suggest, a very open letter about the site visit we saw, because it's indisputable what we saw.
Okay. Any observations about food? Was it the housing, the bathroom, all of that?
We said earlier, and it was said in my report, my letter, that that's not the issue. It was pretty good. One of the rooms had three people in it. Didn't make sense when there are three bedrooms or four bedrooms. The other thing is there was no lockbox, which is a requirement if one reads the licensure requirements for boarding homes. They each should have their own secure thing. That's in there too, but that's a subset of the real issue.
Okay.
And so, no, there was nothing else, Holly. We would mention it. Jerry and I would have mentioned that. The issue was
Dr. Potts, I'm not asking these. I have your report. I read it. I made notes. The members of the public who are participating and listening don't have your letter. So if I could ask you to just please list the deficiencies that you found so that the public who's listening in, not a member of the committee who didn't get that background, will understand exactly what, Jerry, if you and Dr. Potts can tell us exactly what you found.
It is written. I'll tell you what exactly we found. We found a residence, behavioral health licensed residential facility that had four SMI members. And it was a clean residence. It was understaffed, but that's a staffing issue that can be arguable. What we found and we feel is a violation of human rights is the lack of any programming occurring, an inability to leave for or leave the facility or individualized treatment. That was a primary issue I found, and I think Jerry agrees, Ms. Earl. And the secondary one, very secondary one, is the lack of a secure locking environment for personal property. But that's secondary.
And so it, not only the programming, but really, truly, this was a home where these four people would get up, have their cereal, sit and watch some TV or do whatever they do. Two people, two staff on site. You don't go anywhere. You don't have any meaningful contact. You don't have anyone who can provide you with any sort of support. This was just a babysitting service.
And this is in my experience, I've been going to a dozen different group homes in a different role in the last month. This is common.
Yeah, it is. So, I agree.
Yeah, well,
with your calendar on the wall. You know, many places have their calendar of their activities each day. It's often in the kitchen or in a hallway. Was there a calendar?
I don't remember, and I may have taken a photo of that, but that's still not the issue. The issue
Dr. Potts, there wasn't a calendar on the wall of what activities, when we're going where, or what groups are going where, when someone's coming in to do anything. There was nothing.
Okay. Not in this house.
Good. All right. So, okay, excellent. With that, Josh, do you have questions? He's looking at some things.
No, I think somebody else brought up these things come up, and then it seems like they disappear in the vacuum. You know, Jackson said he's got to make it for, but they come up and they're put off into a vacuum. What should be our follow up? What should be the protocol? Because that's a big problem. It's and somebody else said this is not a one off. It's happening everywhere, and it is part of our role to make sure it doesn't happen. So. The follow-up has been kind of the issue. And if I was going to write, what could we do better? What have been dissatisfied? It's probably that, is that we need to make sure that we're kind of a bulldog when it comes to these kinds of things, following up with the plan with Medicaid as, you know, as the tour. And so, excuse me, Jeff. I think having a process that we put these things into.
Okay. Good. Okay. So the, as I'm, Rachel, Summer, anybody else have any questions?
Holly, I had a question. This is Katie.
And maybe you know what, Katie? We because you're not yet a member, they have these open meeting law rules. You can't talk.
We voted her in as a member, Holly. This an hour ago, we voted her in as a member. You can't have it both ways. Either we voted as a member starting next month or this month. Katie was voted in as a member. I apologize. The detective was. Katie wasn't. Yeah,
I'll save my question, Holly.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, Holly.
Hey, Holly. One concern I have, and I just raised it to Access and to Mercy and all the plans, is if this is happening so consistently, the births nowadays, that they have such a lack of staff or lack of programming. What we don't want to do on one hand is close down all the births because, but what is the plan to get appropriate programming back in? And what is their monitoring plan? And how are they going to resolve this? What is their workforce development plan to make sure it's happening? Because as guardians of someone that was in a lot of births, our son would get disenrolled for not engaging in all the programming early days for stability. But it sounds like that's a lot different than what's going on now. So I think we have a system issue. We don't want to just beat up all the providers and close down all the homes and then wonder why there's nowhere to go. But we do want a corrective action plan. And I don't care if they need to have mobile teams that go from one home to another to do the programming until they get their act together, so be it. Maybe that's what they're going to have to do.
You know what? I'm not sure who that is on the phone at 480 ending in 87. This is Jerry, but you know what? You're absolutely right. What we don't want to do and what we can't do is drive people out of this business. You can't sit on them and say, we need this, and then nobody wants to do it. That's not the way to make it happen. We have people who are getting a lot of money and they are funneling it down to other people. And so we need to deal with the people who are buying these services and make sure that or help ensure that that those services are being there. I don't think we want to drive anybody out because really it's already,
I think it's a trend right now. Yeah, it's a trend right now. And I think if we're not careful, it'll get worse. They have to, between access and the plans, they really need to pay attention.
What we had, we had the adult
decisions. Jeff, I thought we just made a decision. We're going to collect information and then report it up rather than making a decision about who stays in business, who doesn't. And I would disagree with that. I mean, I think there's some providers, if they're doing what we heard today, that person should not be in business. Well, so, but that's not our role. Our role is to collect information and then, like you guys just said, report it up to Mercy Care and to Medicaid. So let's do that.
Yeah.
So here's what I'd like to make a motion that Jerry and I be permitted to draft a letter that will follow what the one we did in 10 years ago and the recommendations, and then we can look at it. Would forward this to the facility manager, Access and Mercy Care, with the query about what we believe are the rights violations, lack of programming. And then we do that. And secondly, we have had come to this meeting the head of adult programming for Mercy Care. And she said she would like to learn about any of these births that aren't doing this. And this gets to Lori's issue. And I think we need to find, if we find a couple of these places and start seeing a pattern, we can start saying what's going on here.
Okay. But, all right. A couple of things. And just so we understand what's a possible response would be, the birth, while being, we are assuming that this birth is in fact paid to provide all of those services. Many births do not. Many births contract the services out to outpatient clinics, to the member's medical home, to a number of other places. And so we are going to have to address that, because if we write and say there are all these human rights violations because no services were being provided, we haven't asked the question about whether this birth is compensated on a full day per diem or whether they're contracted, whether they're paid on a different way. So I think that's something we've got to work on.
Well, can I disagree? Because I just got a response from an inquiry I did. I said, why this person who died of a drug overdose was at a SMI facility. And I said, gee, were they being drug tested? And the response I got back was, Mercy Care wasn't paying for the drug testing, blah, blah, blah. So I think we send an inquiry saying we didn't see services and let them come back. Well, we're not responsible for services at that birth. So, I mean, I don't want to wait 3 months, and it's not my job to do inquiries into who pays what. It's our job to see what the violations are. They weren't getting treatment.
Dr. Potts, I understand. What I'm trying to do, because this is a public meeting, public record, and we're talking about a birth in a particular smaller town, I don't want to create a record that suggests that we have concluded that there are human rights violations going on, because we don't know what that particular birth was contracted to do. That's all I'm saying.
Well, why don't we do a letter that the committee will do it, and then we can forward it to the chairs. And if they feel okay, it goes out under your signature. But I think we need to move on this rather than wait to see who what. I just want to do something. I mean, this is, that's all. So that was my thoughts, is that Jerry and I'm willing to sit down with Ms. Roll and write a letter of inquiry about the concerns we have. That's all.
If you will draft the letter and then send it to Josh and me, and we will look at it and edit and sign it for the committee to, do we want to bring it back to the committee?
No, no, all it right. takes too long. It takes another 60 days.
God's well, sake. That's the reason for my question. And we used to do that, and it would take 3 months to get letters out. So may I have a motion? Dr. Potts, do you want to make the motion?
Yes, that Ms. Rowell, the people to the site visit, compose a letter with their concerns, and that it be forwarded to the appropriate agencies after review by the chairs.
I second the motion.
I'm sorry, I second that motion.
Oh, I'm sorry, Matthew seconded it. Okay. Motion's been made. Everybody understand the motion, and we will call for the vote. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. And we may have to do editing back and forth, but we will do it in a way that doesn't create a problem with the open meeting law. Okay. Moving on, new business. I think that we in the earlier in the conversation have touched on some areas that Josh and I want to focus on, and report on in the annual report. I've had feedback from several members that they thought it might be useful to have subcommittees to work closely on certain areas that we know are priorities and work more efficiently and have more in-depth work by the subcommittees. We can do that in a way that doesn't violate the open meeting laws. And we've got great flexibility to do it. Among the priorities are going to be obviously the IADs and the site report, the site visits. We have a kind of a threshold question that I need to ask Frederica. Our statutory mandate is that it says we may make site visits and shall make site visits to special assistance members. In order to do that, we have to have access again to the addresses and names of special assistance members. We can't currently get that. Can you find out the solution here, and when can we start getting the special assistance list?
So you all should have a copy of that, but you have to get it from the FTP portal. So if you haven't been in there, you're 9 times out of 10 locked out of there. I don't know if anyone in your committee is still pulling that, but that report is uploaded on or around the 25th of each month, depending on if it's a holiday or if it falls on a Friday or a Saturday or Sunday, that kind of thing. So usually on or around the 25th, it's uploaded into the FDP server, all the special assistance members. So you have to go to the server to get it.
Okay. My understanding is that we no longer are able, that the special assistance list is not accessible to us in the portal.
That's not, well, no.
I believe Joy was unable to get the special assistance.
May I clarify? Two things. One is, the special assistance list that I used for years is at a separate website. I and your team went over hours and hours of trying to get me back on it. I could not get back on it. And I need to revisit that because I can't get on. And I tried. I reset passwords. I, sent money orders to the bank and to Mexico City. I did everything to try to get back on that ETF. I could not get on that ETF. Secondly, another issue is, and we talked about, and this one I think Holly's referring to, is on the QM portal, there used to be a special assistance.
Yes.
With IADs specifically for special assistance patients where there was incident accident or death reports. Those incident reports we no longer get. That needs to be done because when a special assistant client is involved, that is a specific requirement of us to review, a special need. So I think that's that, and I know we talked about it before, but still, how do we get that done? So it, at least we can see what the IADs are for that special class of seriously mentally ill individuals.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, this is a process that you guys used to have. And when CJ and I were both in OHR, she did a training and it was said to you all back then that that information would no longer be in the portal because it was entered into the portal by way of the member giving that information. So it wasn't accurate. So that's the reason why that information is no longer in the portal, because it's not information that's put in by staff members, that kind of thing. It's information that's given by the member. So that was many moons ago, and I'd have to go back through my email to confirm exactly the date on that, but it's been a few years now because I haven't been with CJ in at least that long. So can do is ask the ISD division if that's something that they can revisit to see if it can be added back in.
By member, I don't know what you mean. The patient enters it themselves or the member of managed care organization enters it?
It's entered not the patient's not entering it. The information that's given is by the patient.
So the clinics don't know that John Doe is special assistance?
What was that?
So if John Doe is a special assistance, caseload on special assistance, and been identified as that, the clinic is unaware of that status?
No, that's not what I'm saying. But that report is done already, and it's entered into the FTP server.
But
what you guys are asking for, or at least what I'm hearing, is that you want that information to be in the QM portal.
Like it used to be. Why can't they just check?
Because that information in the QM portal, you guys don't get names and all of that information. So from what OHR advised is it becomes a HIPAA violation because that information has to be entered in based off of that person's name, date of birth, access ID number. Otherwise, there's no way for you all to tell if it's a special assistance person.
That's not correct because
that's not the way that's entered into the portal.
Well, the
not
bottom line,
it goes into the FTP portal that way, though.
If I may, when you on the IADs, they check a little checkbox whether it's COT or not. They can do a little checkbox whether it's special assistance.
It's on.
Right? See what I'm saying, Holly?
That it's possible, I guess, if the ISD team can create that. But from what I was told, that information is already given by way of the FTP portal. And everybody that at least, you know, created a password and login has information to that. So
you're missing the point. The FTP portal tells all special assistance patients and their location. It does not tell us if there have been any incidents involved with a special assistance client. That's what we're looking at in the IAD. And Holly, I don't mean to step on this, but I think that's one of the issues, is it not?
I think all of this discussion has really pinpointed the core problems that we've been having in completing our IADs and getting all the addresses of our special assistance members.
Well, the information is there. So I'm not going to sit here and say that you guys don't have access to it. nobody goes in there to check it, but it is there. It goes every single month. I'm the one that uploads it, and it comes directly to me from the Office of Human Rights.
Great. And I don't doubt that you do that. We have had, as Dr. Potts explained, the problems that we've had with getting the special assistance information. And if it's, we don't understand the difference in the FTP portal and the QM portal and so on. And Dr. Potts spent a lot of time trying to get to the point to get in and get access the information. But this has been a very helpful discussion, and the transcript of it will be extremely helpful when we start to try and problem solve and get to the bottom of how we solve the problem and get the access that we need to do the job. So if you look on the agenda, we have under new business, the general topic is strategies to complete the IOC workflow. And that was assignment of IADs. Dr. Potts has made suggestions that we assign those IADs to each member reviewing the IADs by date or by, he had a very detailed method for assigning the IADs. And we may want to do that. I've had feedback from other individuals that they would like to see on the committee that they'd like to see a greater reliance on subcommittees so that smaller groups could tackle and dig in a working group format to address these issues, which are complex, as tonight's meeting has demonstrated. And we would then be able at a meeting to have a presentation from subcommittee or subcommittee members with written material in advance and so forth. One of the subcommittees, for instance, might be site visits. And there's a lot of, I think, infrastructure development, if you will, on our checklist for making site visits, on what are the criteria that we are comparing the facility that we visit, what are we comparing it to? Do we have references? Do we know what we're looking at in the Arizona Administrative Code and in the provider manual and so forth as to what a great or a good or an acceptable or facility would look like, and what does a crummy one look like? And I think that the report we got from Pinnell really helps us focus on those issues. The next issue, I think, under strategies that I listed is, I believe we've got to have a special board meeting, aside from the monthly meeting, where we get the tech people in. We have so many new members, wonderful new members. And hopefully in another, 2 months, Katie will be with us. But we've got a new committee, in effect. We need to have a rollout of the technology in a special meeting that is devoted just to technology, to the use of the portal, to how we access IEDs, to how we search for addresses to make our site visits. And that I would like to have, if possible, it may not be, but if possible, in early October, before we complete our annual report. Because I think some of the things we will learn from our technology meeting, I'm just going to call it that, will inform what we want to think about as our goals and ideas for next year. Larry, is it possible to get and Frederica, can we get a training meeting for board members in October? And could we get maybe two dates or even three that people could sign up for?
Are you referring to the QM portal training?
I don't know which portal I think every portal that we have access to get information on IADs and site visits and special assistance population.
Yeah, we can do a QM portal training for sure, and we can do an FTP one as well. I don't know if you guys want to use your regular meeting for that, or if you guys want to schedule outside of your regular meeting.
Outside.
Then yes, if you guys want to send some dates that work for you all, I can make myself available. And I'll also send over the PowerPoint that it's probably on the website, but I'll send it over to the committee so that they can view that as well.
Okay, that's great. And then we could, you know, some people may be able to work off of PowerPoint, others may, we may want to do ask for a couple of dates so we can have smaller groups to do it. But that's excellent. Thank you. And so we schedule that through you, Frederica, right?
Sure.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Now we had a hand up, Rachel.
And
hey guys. Oh. So I have a question for Dr. Potts and Geraldine. Dr. Potts, in the email that you sent with your reviews of the two site visits, I think you sent one that was from 2013. So I think you meant to send something else. It sounds to me like you guys did a site visit at both the BHRF that we were talking about, but also it was, I believe that was at the Connections UPC Court Ordered Evaluation Center.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Two things. The emails I sent, one was from 10 years ago to give you idea, just to give an idea of how they were conducted and what the follow up was back then, sort of a template. Okay. And we did go to the, Ms. Roll and I did go to the crisis, the evaluation center.
UPC?
In Casa Grande. It's run by CBI.
Okay, gotcha. And one of the concerns that it's a big concern for the community that is worth, I think, documenting now as a follow-up to your guys' visit, is this overcrowding in the COE centers. There was an ACME stakeholder presentation last week where the Connections UPC basically shared that for every 8 people needing a bed at a COT facility, only 1 got a bed, and that 100 people were being released every month, and that the conditions were woefully understaffed at ValleyWise in particular, such that they couldn't accept patients. And so that we have a huge issue with our COE center capacity right now. Also the COT, i.e. ValleyWise hospital capacity. And that is of urgent importance. And I think you guys probably saw what's going on at the COE centers. And that's it's a big concern for the community right now.
Yeah.
I just want to document that.
Yeah, no, and I actually was at Connections UPC on a separate issue by myself, not as a site visit, and they have 60 chairs in a room.
Yep.
60. When we went on a site visit there years ago, they had 16. They have 60 chairs, and the men, women, and they can be there for 7 to 10 days in a chair mix.
Yep.
That is a rights violation in my mind. The larger issues of staffing and closing units is a bigger issue, but that's again a policy issue. But the individuals spending that time, you're 100% right.
Yep.
That's a value of going on these site visits, is we can then bring it down and raise it back up.
Mm-hmm. And I spoke with someone who was actually petitioned over to one of the COE facilities, and there was 60 chairs, and there were 85 people there.
Yeah.
And they told her, pick a chair or pick a square on the floor. And she wanted a blanket. She was cold, and she was upset, and she was devastated. And they didn't have any blankets for her.
Good. Josh, I read a while ago, and this is to your point, Rachel, I read there's a policy that if they go over the limit, they have to do a plan of corrections. So every time they go over the limit, the screening agency shall report that. Do you know if that's accurate?
I don't know if that's accurate. Sounds accurate, but I don't know if
that's accurate. Well, that's maybe a way of looking at this. Maybe we ought to look at that. Maybe I'll look at that again, because that may be, if we have a report and they're mandated to do that every time they go over to 61, there's supposed to be a plan of correction too. So I don't know if that's being ignored or just fiction.
So Dr. Potts, seems to me that in my time in Maricopa County, UPC often had to go on diversion. And so it was because they were overpopulated. And so how did that go into effect? What caused them to go into diversion? So they sort of shut down. They didn't take anybody.
What does on diversion mean? Just shutting down and saying no more admissions?
That's what it was years ago. I don't know.
They won't do that for police. So I can provide you some clarification.
Yes. Sabrina, so, Detective Sabrina.
So Valley-wise is woefully understaffed. They're having a very difficult time hiring and keeping nurses. And they also have floors on quarantine for COVID and the flu. So they are, Mercy Care is well aware, like the system is well aware of this problem. There are monthly meetings with Valley-wise to try to get these numbers up, but it has forever been an issue. So they're doing a pilot program with UPC to have COE court at the UPC. And they're able to do that at a very small amount, but they're getting a lot of pushback from the Office of the Public Advocate. Those have to be virtual and they want them in person, and the county's not going to build another court. So we are well aware of this. There's a lot of effort to try to assist this, but one of the reasons why these centers are filling up is they can't get people to move through the system. And they will try to manage the flow of people, but they're not going to say no to police, because if police are bringing somebody in, then, you know, we want the officers to like leave and go. So yes, it is an issue.
Great. Thank you.
One last quick question. Suppose someone is determined that they need to be admitted, but then they end up being released, and then they go on to commit a terrible crime or get really hurt or hurt somebody else. Does that ever get measured or evaluated or counted as an accident, incident, or a death?
It's usually, if these petitions are expired, they're being repetitioned. It's very rare that they just get rid, to my knowledge. I don't know if you guys know any different, but
if I may say, that's not accurate. My brother is a perfect example of that. He was picked up, pulled out of a canal 3 times in one day, taken to UPC. If they kept him and didn't release him, he would have never committed arson, would never have, you know, been convicted of a felony and gotten in the trouble that he got into. So that's inaccurate. And it's uncommon.
Yeah, I think that this is an important topic, and it's one we can follow up on, because I'm not aware of any database that tracks arrests and looks back to see if that person in the past week, 2 week, whatever, day, hour, had been at one of the screening or evaluation agencies or had just been released from a hospital. I think this is a data link that we need, because we know that we just got last year for the first time the readmission rate to births, and it was almost 2/3. It was close to 65% of patients, and 66% of patients who leave a birth get readmitted, and it was within the year. I
90 days.
With 90 days. Okay. So I think that the linking discharges from urgent care and from births to arrest records is a very important issue, because what we've done is we've moved the jails up to be part of the continuum of care. And that's kind of maybe not what we intended to do, right? So I've made notes on that as areas we will want to talk about and probably deal with next year. The final things under the strategies that I had listed, I am hearing about more and more SMI individuals who are either rescued by Adult Protective Services, or the police are called and the police rescue them, and these are individuals who, because their clinics don't have housing or a birth placement, they are living in group homes, quote unquote, or board and care homes, quote unquote. And some of the places are atrocious. In Tucson, they have for a while used board and care homes as housing for the SMI. The clinics actively refer to board and care homes in Tucson. We didn't do that much up here, but just this year I have had SMI clients who, in fact, the case managers had taken to a board and care home when they didn't have, and it was because they didn't have an alternative, and then they left them there and nobody checked on them. It's becoming, my sense, is a problem. So Adult Protective Services is also frequently involved in those situations when they get a referral and they go to the board and care or the group homes. So my question is, do we have a way of linking, finding out from Adult Protective Services, the individuals who were, they had a complaint about, and they went out and they found them in an unlicensed facility, and the person is an SMI, is living with SMI and is an enrolled member in the BIRF. And why are they there? And I'm not suggesting that I understand it could be a really practical solution, but I think the migration of individuals with SMI into unlicensed houses in Phoenix is an increasing phenomenon, and it's relatively new here compared to other places, thanks to really to Arnold V. Sarn here. So those are issues I wanted to put on the agenda under new business, and I would like to try and get, if need be, a virtual meeting. But I'd like to hear some discussion if people, I think Matthew has some ideas about subcommittees. Yeah. If you would like, we have Dr. Pott's suggestion about the assignment of IADs. Matthew, could you share your thoughts on subcommittees?
Yeah, I think it would just allow us to be nimble, like the smaller organization. We get to work on the things that we're all passionate about. And then, you know, I think one of the issues is that we meet every month, or sometimes if a thing's canceled, now we're 2 months or 3 months past. And I still have a thing on the agenda, I believe, today about this request we made for Mercy Care 4 months ago. So I like the subcommittee idea because, you know, if Jack loves doing home visits and someone else doesn't have a car, we're not going to put the person without a car on that. You know, I'm just trying to make up reasons why. If someone hates IADs because they rode them for 10 years and they don't want to look at it anymore, even though they don't really qualify, whatever. So that would allow us to be more nimble in those areas. Rachel's whole thing about, sorry, Rachel, I can't see my way to my arms, but everything that Rachel's been working on with those individual people that aren't getting their medication, getting discharged from the hospital, like that needs to be addressed, and that should be followed up on consistently by, you know, people that are focused on that. And I think by dividing and conquering these pieces and coming to this meeting and, you know, having discussions about things as need be, but if, you know, just what happened today with the birth that Jack went to, and Mr. Roll, sorry, that would just be Jack shows up, here's the five that we did, here's the reports, you had them prior to the thing, we're recommending these five go to Mercy Care for response, and we're done.
And we're done.
Yeah, and then it'll be the same thing with IEDs. We reviewed 50 IEDs, we saw no problems, or we have these three that need responses from Mercy Care, but we're seeing a pattern now, and we need Mercy Care or access to respond to this pattern. And we, you know what I mean? Like, then they would come to the big group and say that. So I guess that's just how I think we'll get more efficient, because Jack it's been on the nose about us not following up on things, and partially that's my fault as a secretary. But I think this is a way to divide it where people know what they're going into, they're passionate about that, or have more knowledge about that, and we can be more nimble instead of waiting. That's everything, I guess.
Any thoughts on subcommittees? So that we probably do it by subject matter, and nobody would have to stay on one subcommittee. It's not going to be like you only can work on this issue. We just have subcommittees rotate around from time to time. Is that, anybody have thoughts one way or another in addition to what Matthew said?
I definitely think it makes sense to do a divide and conquer approach. We should probably put some thought into what exactly those subcommittees should be.
Great. Summer?
I agree. I think we can get a larger footprint, you know, on the ground if there aren't these subcommittees, then there might be too much focus on one area in comparison to the other. And needless to say, there's a lot of room and need for help in every area of SMI, you know, whether it's looking at the conditions in which they're living in, if they're receiving appropriate services within those, you know, living conditions, but also, you know, the unsafe discharge. Are we seeing frequent flyers? How many times? You know, I think there's, if you have a split, we're able to address and get, you know, just better quality, hopefully, for these individuals, get them what they need, you know, bring to the attention. That way it can't be ignored by, you know, Access, Mercy Care, the providers. You can't ignore it.
Okay, good.
And I would concur. I think there's two things we have to keep in mind. There's a lot of IADs, and I think I personally believe we all should become familiar with that. The only person who couldn't last time didn't have any access to computers. But I think there's a lot of them, and I think it helps us to maybe parse them out, and it doesn't mean we can't rotate it, but I sure as hell don't want to look at 1,000 IADs. I mean, I just can't do that. So, and a group of three can't divide it so many, number one. So I think maybe having a spearhead like me or Joy or someone saying, hey, I am in charge of collating the IEDs and assisting with the different members. So one person be the IED sort of a go-to person. Also on site visits, we all need to go to site visits, part of our bylaws. And I'm disappointed that, you know, we're not. And I think that's a fun part. And I know that someone could maybe co-chair the arranging the site visits, you know, a chair saying, hey, we're going to go to these places on such stuff, like Geraldine and I did, you know, let's go this day because Holly and Josh in the committee said, let's do the first Friday. Well, no one went on the first Friday except we did. No one went last month on the first Friday, you know, so I think maybe we need someone who were like Summer saying, hey, I'll bird dog that. I'll put out these feelings and say, hey, here's a 3 days. We're going to do site visits. Who wants to do it? And I'll be the lead person on that, because some of these tasks, I think, need more than just a subcommittee. They need the whole committee involved, but maybe just one person reporting and whatever. Those are some thoughts. I agree we need to break it down and realize it's not just one meeting a month for 3 hours or 2 hours. That is our obligation in the Human Rights Committee here. And I'm willing to do, as you know.
Great. I think we've had, for as long as I've been on the committee, since it was, I don't know, 2010, 11, I don't remember. Joy's been on longer than I, and Dr. Potts was on, I think, probably the inaugural committee in Maricopa County. But getting site visits done has always been a problem because it's time consuming, and coordinating was difficult. We did a lot when Magellan was the REBA, because this first of all, there were a heck of a lot fewer people. There probably were, there were probably 15,000 SMI in Maricopa then. Now there's whatever there are. So it was a smaller population, and the computer system was much simpler. It was just simpler. which doesn't mean that it was better, but it was simpler. So I think we've got to get on top of our onboarding new members, which is the perfect opportunity for those of us who are here and have let our skills lapse or slip or whatever. We can upgrade our skills and we'll all be more engaged and successful. I will follow up with Frederica about scheduling the meetings and for all of us to learn how to do this better and in the appropriate portals. I want to be sure that we, and then I want to explore with Larry and Josh, and I are trying to, we're going to need a meeting that's not one of these monthly meetings where we have all the agenda things to go through, to focus just for an hour or so on what our work plan is for next year. And it can be virtual. I'm happy to do it on at 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning, virtually, and or sometime that's easy, that doesn't burden everybody's calendars, work and personal calendars. But I believe we need, it has to be an open meeting, but you just post it and then you have your agenda. We don't have all the other issues that we have to deal with. So I'm gonna look for a time in October, hopefully, that we can have that meeting, a working meeting, if we have to do two, because we can't get everybody together. Josh and I will have to figure out, and we'll just have to do that. And Matt, the secretary, the officer, so we can hopefully get a reasonable work plan together. And then in the next week or two, I'm gonna be following up individually with members to try and see what your ideas are about a work plan for next year. I tried to throw some ideas out. I believe that wraps that up. I did want to ask Josh, because he's a member of the, under new business, he's a member of the Joint Legislative Review Council on Psychiatric Hospital Capacity. It will be co-chaired this year by Senator Wadsack and Bev, Representative Pincarelli. It was highly successful in its prior year. It was created by Senator Bartow, embraced by the legislature, embraced by the executive agencies. You can go and read about it online at the Arizona Legislature. It's on there as a special committee or a standing committee, I think it's standing committee. And it exists at least through 2026. As a result of a bunch of meetings, and in fact, Rachel was in one down at with staff and folks, and Senator Bartow's been helping Senator Wadsack and Representative Pincarelli, you know, get things moving. So I think that there are five areas of interest that they've narrowed down to, at least for presentation initially. Josh was at the meeting this week and can give a little discussion about those, and then we're going to wrap it up. But I do think as we plan what we're going to do next year, we can be an integral. We need to be sure that what we're thinking about at least is informed by what this committee's going to do. And we may be able to lend support, provide testimony, give great stories to the committee. So I see it as something where we can contribute to that policy process.
Before Josh goes, I didn't see Matt's report. He was on the business. He's on the agenda.
To talk about the.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped it. I'm sorry. Yeah, there we go. I'm sorry. Forget everything I just said, but I'm not going to repeat it. We'll come back in just a second. So, Matt.
Okay.
Go for it.
So a couple months ago, we expressed concern about guardianship and whether or not a guardian can consent to treatment for an SMI person, a person with SMI. And we formally made a motion to request that Mercy Care provide any guidelines or training they provide to SMI clinics to help them understand that a legal guardian is consent. Mercy Care came back, I think through Larry, tell me if I'm wrong, Larry, but if I can paraphrase, essentially what they were saying is that's a very broad topic, that is they ask for more specificity. Well, they wanted more specificity. So this is 4 months old now at this point. I didn't think what we requested was broad in any way, shape, or form. And I would like to recommend that we as IOC say, no, we would like you to answer the question as written, and make them give that, because it's not super difficult. It's what's the AMPM say? What do your guidelines say? What is your contractual obligation with these people? So that's what I would like to request today, but I wanted to bring it back up for discussion because I know it was a hot topic when we started it.
The letter that was sent in response was clearly written by Mercy's lawyers.
Yeah.
And it basically said policies that relate to how we deal with guardians are confidential business records and are not going to be distributed to anybody. That is a classic response from the Reba's lawyers. Josh and I have seen it before. And it's unfortunate, but that's their legal position. The takeaway from that is that there is no way for a guardian to know, or for advocates for patients to know, how any given clinic within Mercy is going to respond to a guardian. Josh is the expert on guardianships, but and I think we probably need to have a more thorough discussion, but the notion to me that there is not a mechanism in Arizona to know what the REBA's, what Mercy's policy is as to how guardians are treated and what their legal rights and responsibilities and constraints are. If that is a confidential business policy, then we need to change the law. And we need to make it not a confidential business policy. But that's a larger discussion, but I'd like to have Josh's views on this.
Well, I think it's a discussion about how we follow up, like Matt said, because there is policy, there is guidance, and it's the Arizona Administrative Code, and it's the statutes, and it's the AMPM, and it's the contract itself between Access and Mercy Care that says what a guardian's authority is and when they can consent to care, which is whenever there's a guardian in place, they replace the person, the SMI member, as that decision maker. So that's very clear. But Mercy Care doesn't do that. Mercy Care doesn't allow for the guardian to consent in certain situations, like consenting to an ACT team, consenting to a birth. And so
counseling.
Exactly. So how do we follow up with them to get to that question? All I want them to say is we do follow the administrative code, the statutes, or we don't. But they're spitting back to us lawyers speak.
So yeah, they spit back and said, we're not going to tell you what our policy is.
Well, why don't we not ask about policy? Let's ask what they do. How often do you train the clinics? When do you have training for the clinics on guardianship role? And can we see the training materials? We're not asking about policies at all. This is stuff they provide to clinics. So what training have you provided or do you provide? Please let us know. I'm just saying that's a layperson's way of maybe looking around, getting around that. Just a thought.
I think the thing we have to do that we haven't done in the past is just keep knocking on the door. Keep follow up until we, even if they spit back another letter and say, well, we're not going to answer, we'll follow up with another letter and keep drilling down as much as we can. So I think however we follow up, what Jack just suggested is a good idea. Let's just ask for their training. We could also ask very specific question in a circumstance where there's a guardian in place and counseling is needing, may the guardian consent to the therapy, may the guardian consent to an app team, ask them very specific questions.
Great idea.
Have to say those. Do we have to make a motion in this meeting and say what we are asking them?
I'd like a motion. It doesn't have to have all the questions in it. I'd like a motion as to how we're going to proceed. And if you want it to be you and Josh, talk to Dr. Potts as necessary, you know, who's going to follow up on it?
I move that Matthew follow up on, Mr. Moody follow up with the previous letter and their response in a manner discussed today.
I'll second. Rachel, were you?
Yeah, I had, you know, this comes up and Josh mentioned several of them. I mean, we could probably come up with five real specific questions. Level of care at discharge, ACT team, medication observations, and speaking with the guardian without the ward present. Great. Those are the ones that come up.
Okay. So, Rachel, the motion then would be that Matthew, Jack, would you accept an amendment that the motion be that Matthew working with Rachel and Josh follow up with the with a response?
Yes. And in fact, Matthew can choose whomever he wishes to discuss the letter. He can consult with the world. But yes, that's a friendly amendment.
Okay, I'll second that as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Okay, we're down.
No, two more things. One, if I may, is Matthew, are you going to do the list about what we did and who's responsible, like we talked about and you said you were going to do?
You're saying about breaking it down in kind of like what you did in the email?
No, what you said, no, in general, the secretary was going to have a follow-up.
Yes, follow-up on action items. Yeah.
Who's responsible, action items, time, yes, dates. Okay. Secondly, I have not heard, nor has the committee heard, anything about inquiry sent about Emmanuel Campus of Care. Did we not send a formal inquiry about whether or not they have to do IADs, because they had never done an IAD? So are there specific, remember we talked about that, are there specific agencies that are not required to do IADs? Do you remember, Josh? We're all there.
If you're licensed and you house SMI members, you have to do IADs.
But we sent, the IOC voted months ago on an inquiry about that. Have we received a response?
I don't remember that. I may not have been at that meeting, but do you remember? I mean, Larry, do you remember that at all? Or Frederica? I know you guys have a million meetings, but.
We'll have to go. All right. I will go back. We'll go back and look at the minutes and find the exact vote on that.
Why don't I just make a new motion to do it? How's that sound? Because we discussed that at length months ago. Emmanuel Campus of Care, four or five of us were there, and they said they'd never done an IAD, and we searched and couldn't find it. So I would move that we formally ask whomever is Emmanuel Campus of Care specifically required to do IADs, and if so, why have they not done any? Because there's none they've done.
Who licenses Emmanuel? Is it licensed?
Yes.
Okay. What is it licensed?
I have no bloody idea, but they house SMIs in supervisory care, nursing home. They have like probably 600 people there.
Okay. I'll figure out what it's licensed as, and that'll be, that will point us down the right road at least, because that's the first start, and it's IMM or EMM.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's with an I. We were there. I mean, am I mistaken? Maybe you need to go back to the minutes. I apologize, but this has been months. Maybe you should look at the minutes, but this is something we need to investigate, because Josh, I think you were at the meeting, weren't you? Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, I think are you asking how it's spelled? I think it's
no, about our discussion afterward about they never did an IAD, and we talked about that 4 months ago, and we got no resolution.
Well, so Jack, what I take from that is that when there's action items, I need to follow up on them better. It sounds like we need to make a motion today and just start it back up.
That's what I just did. I agree. And that's what I just did to try. So you don't have to waste your time going back to the minutes.
Okay.
But So
you want to make the motion, Jack?
I did, but I'll say it again. A number of us were at the Emmanuel Campus of Care, which has hundreds of patients, many SMI. They had suicides and others. They didn't know about the IEDs. So we talked about that. And the motion is that the IOC is inquiring whether, in fact, this facility or any other facility that is licensed and houses SMIs is not obliged to do IEDs.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. I believe that brings us to public comments. Katie Williams has been patiently waiting and listening and probably trying to hit retract the email that she sent her application attached to.
But Josh was going to report. He didn't talk about the, remember you said he wanted to do that and then we broke in with Matt's thing.
Okay.
Right? I don't care. I mean, it's, you said that Josh was going to talk about the,
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a legislative committee that has been focused for the past couple of years on SMI issues. This year, we kind of set the agenda yesterday, and it's going to be on five issues that I think impact the chronically mentally ill. So that's what it's going to be is ASH oversight, secure births, and how do we get them up and running, births, like the services that they provide, medical necessity, inappropriate discharges, admissions, things like that. Workforce development, SMI workforce development, in particular SMI rural workforce development, and how we can make some progress there, improve the quality of the staffing. Then I can't remember the fifth one, but we have our first meeting October 10th or 12th. To get set up, we're going to do three planning meetings, and then we're going to have the actual committee meetings the beginning of next year. So it's an important group because it has the bully pulpit of the legislature. It flows into session so we can create bills, create funding. So it's important, and the more participation we have, the better it's going to be. So I think that's it.
So there will be no meetings of the council this year. There will be the planning meetings.
Right.
Okay. Okay, good. That, so there won't be a report, really. Well, there'll be a report from the planning.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that.
So that's a maybe.
Maybe on the council meetings being before the end of the year.
Because she's got
all it. We were focused on yesterday was getting the planning meetings set up so that we could be ready to vote. So
okay.
Don't quote me on that.
And the first planning meeting is on
October 10th.
And what's the subject?
We're going to be setting the stage for the population, the chronically mentally ill, what they need, why they're so high cost, the gaps in the system. So the plan is to kind of set up, in some ways, like we did last time.
Right.
You know, police, everybody that touches that group.
Got it.
Kind of the subcontinuum of care, police, fire, emergency rooms, jails, right, county attorneys, judges, and the criminal justice system. Getting everybody together to discuss. That's going to be the first meeting. Because
mm-hmm.
I think it'll be more interesting that way.
Yeah,
it's more explainable to the public.
Right.
And so that'll be the first planning meeting. And that's about as far as we've got.
Okay. All right. So that's kind of an update on that. It is an update on that. Katie Williams. Hello, public comments. What are your thoughts? What did you want to talk to us about?
So maybe Dr. Potts would have more insight about this. We were kind of talking about the BHRFs and their lack of programming and services for the clients that are living in the facility. How often are they, and maybe this wasn't addressed, but how often kind of bucking that responsibility off onto the SMI clinics when the client is SMI? Because something that we see at the Public Defender is that because the SMI clinics are so depleted that the treatment, they go without treatment. And so then the symptoms become criminalized. And then their recourse is to call the police on the client. So I'm just wondering, I think Holly, you kind of touched on, we don't know if they're being paid for these certain, for the certain programming, or if maybe that's the SMI clinic's responsibility, but I was just kind of curious about whose role that is or whose responsibility that is.
Sure.
If I may.
The responsibility of the birth is dependent on the scope of services that they're contracted to provide. And the scope of services depends what they're, determines what they're paid for. So, and you can have a birth that does some services in-house and contracts out to have other services provided outside by outside contractors. There are certain services in the regulations that require certain services to only be provided by the birth. But in reality, other entities do provide those services, and that has led to a lot of confusion as to who had the right to bill for the service. So the birth would have been billing for the service, providing the service. A patient, let's take case management. Births are paid as part of their fee to do case management. So they're doing case management. A patient goes to his clinic and gets his injection, and somebody there is a case manager, and they say, hey, how are you doing? Do you need a ride home? Okay, we'll get your ride called. And they bill for case management. The case management in that instance, you bill in increments of 15 minutes. So if you talk to somebody for 5 minutes or 7 minutes, you bill for 15. What's happened is Access comes in and they say, wait, the birth is billing for that. The clinic is billing for that. Birth, you should have known that the clinic was going to talk to them when they were there about transportation. You're unbundling billing, and we're going to say that that's fraud to the birth, and vice versa. So it's not a clean system. Josh and I have been immersed in it for months now, and there is very poor monitoring, very poor tracking, and poor communication among the births and other providers as to who is billing for what services, that in many instances the birth is providing and being paid to provide, but the other providers, the case managers in the clinics, are also going to be providing case management, so they're billing for it. It's confusing.
If I can add, in the old days, as Holly and some of us remember, patients would stay at the birth. They were supposed to be getting treatment there. The birth was getting paid to do some treatment and stuff. They weren't doing it. Patients generally were going to the clinic and getting groups and being transferred there. And that's what happened. They were going to the clinics. And most of them, a good percent, were spending the day there. And that was a good thing, we thought. A lot of them would stay in bed and refuse to go. And then we'd sort of encourage them to go and talk to case manager. Why aren't they prodding them more? What happened, I think, from a layman's perspective, is that Access came in and said, whoops, just what Holly said. We're paying the birth to do certain things, and we're paying the clinics to do these. They said, we're not going to pay the clinics anymore. So it defaulted to the births, and the bottom line is the births weren't ever, in most cases, we've seen some good ones, didn't have the capabilities of providing the level of service that these patients were getting. Furthermore, it was helping with independence because they'd go to the clinic, be out, see other people from different homes, take transportation. So I think when Access came in and the system changed, they realized it is fraud or whatever was wrong, but we're just going to pay the births now. The rules say they can do both. They can pay both. But that's
an observation that I'm seeing now is that the birth residents are going to the clinics, the SMI clinics, for groups, if you will. And I think you're right, Katie, the SMI clinics are depleted. The quality of services is really not good in some SMI clinics. And we have problems with, for example, just the VAO, the transportation is wonky. Their rides don't show up. They go to the so-called group, but they're smoking out in the parking lot for the whole group. And there's not a lot of oversight, and kids are getting in trouble and get into drugs in the bathroom and run off to the Circle K. So the SMI clinics have some issues in providing these services, as do the BERFs. I mean, and Katie's right, they're a bit depleted.
And statutorily, I mean, under Arnold versus Sarn, my understanding is that the clinic has to provide certain services. I mean, they can't rely on the BERF, right? Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
The BERFs were, well, this is a discussion that we may want to have a really thorough discussion with some outside experts on here at some point. If we don't have anything else, we're over time. And I apologize for that. We had too much of an agenda, and we're going to learn to be more efficient. At least I am. And I'm sure I created a lot of the inefficiency. I apologize for us going late. Motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you, Katie. Welcome, Sabrina. Where did Sabrina go? She went to the ladies' room. She thinks she's had a birthday. This has gone so long.
Thank you for having me.
So thank you, Katie, and we look forward to having you back next month.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.